I was thinking about dog stuff, kind of.
Yeah, I have been too, constantly, actually. I'll tell you more about it later. Go ahead.
Okay, this is probably not the same dog stuff you were thinking about. But, like, I don't know, dog stuff. We say it all the time. We don't really know dog stuff. This is not, like, we're not full of dog knowledge on this podcast.
Although slowly.
But, right, yeah, we can't. But, that said, I was thinking, like, you know when, like, your ears ring?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're just, like, maybe you're just, like, sitting on the couch or something, and all of a sudden you, like, maybe hear it in one ear or two ears, and it rings. And maybe, like, I oftentimes will take, like, a finger and, like, wiggle that ear or something, and I feel like it goes away. Or sometimes I just will be, like, then sometimes you just, like, hold the frequency. And sometimes when I hear shit like that, I'm, like, is this, like, dog stuff? Like, can dogs hear what I'm hearing, or is this just, like, my body? Like, sometimes I think, like, wow, am I hearing just a frequency I can't usually hear?
Mm-hmm. I've never thought about that. I can't believe, actually, that I've never thought
that maybe there's a real source. I've thought about that, and that you haven't thought about that. It seems more like a thing you would worry about than me, but here we are.
We have switched bodies, yes.
Yep, and this is what fucking Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan. I'm obviously Jamie Lee. You're obviously Lilo, like, no question. Lilo the Sam Ronson years, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
We've switched bodies. Freaky Friday style. What up? No, but, like, I do wonder this sometimes, because we've talked about other things on this show where, like, somebody has, like, some sort of brain injury, and then all of a sudden, you know, they can play classical piano or they're like a sculptor. And I'm like, what cavern in your brain did you, like, unlock?
Right.
And sometimes I'm like, am I unlocking an ability of, like, my hearing that just, like, is underlying?
Yeah. Little part of your brain that knows how to read that frequency. I know this isn't how it works, but I
don't think that it is, but, like,
but I see you.
I,
like,
do wonder.
Did, like, yeah, the vibration get trapped in there? It's wiggling a little part of just one of my ears. So how would you explain only hearing it in one ear if it is, like, external?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, but it's like I don't feel like your ears are exactly, like, synchronized. It's like your eyesight. You know what I mean? Like, if you cover one eye
and then
you
cover the other,
they're in different areas. And people can be deaf in one ear and not the other. So I don't see why you couldn't actually have varied degrees of hearing. And when you do the hearing tests, like at school, they test both ears, right? And I feel like we don't put a lot of stock into this, but people lose hearing in one ear. So I think, like, while we talk about, like, this is my corrective lens on one eye is stronger than the other, I would assume, actually, probably all of us hear on one side better than the other. We just haven't looked into that enough to be aware of it. It's probably not that
easy
to test.
It's just less noticeable, yeah.
Yeah, unless you're, like, really doing a controlled test with, like, those headphones and, like, the little beeps, you know?
The beeps, I do know. Well, I'm definitely going to pay attention to Heisenberg next time my ears ring and see if, like, he's doing a head tilt or anything that would indicate.
Yeah, check in on the dog.
Yeah, check in on the dog.
He might be. That actually is really, I think, my favorite part that I took away from this. I don't necessarily believe. It's more of a stoned thought when I'm like, is this really what the world sounds like?
Sure, yeah.
But I do feel like my takeaway from this is, like, man, we're not really thinking about how our hearing is different in different ears. And
no, we're not.
The same way we think about our sight being different with different eyes. It's kind of interesting.
It is. The lesser senses.
That'll keep me up at night. Then I'm going to be like, well, you need to know which side's your good side so you know which way, which ear to sleep on if you're a side sleeper. So if you're going to be attacked, you have a better chance of, you know.
You always got to be prepared. That is the kind of shit that I think about.
Always got to be prepared.
Always prepared.
Listen. Always, I did say it weird. It just came out that way.
Prepared. Yeah, we can prepared. All these peers.
Always prepared, like a Boy Scout with a speech impediment. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
And then I get, like, a little misty, and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than, like, people?
But it doesn't have to. He licks all the beakers and flasks and tubes until he finds it.
No. Are you making this up?
I'm not. This is how it was discovered. Hands-on, in-the-field experience to hydrate youths.
Which I know you're like, great, Austin, so you're drinking that fake water again? This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Soul-searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so it's something we can all enjoy together. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, you know, dog stuff, whatever. Really, really, whatever.
Really.
We're noodling on any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan checking in with her controlled variable, the dog, in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams with a cat who I'm not sure would hear the frequencies, but maybe? Question mark?
Cats can hear more than humans.
In Chicago. Okay, well, you have that then.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they have a better sense of hearing than
we
do. Yeah,
they must. Animals, yeah. Our ears are flattened to the sides dog of our stuff. Heads. Yeah. Dog stuff.
Yeah. What a unfortunate de-evolution. We were like, we don't need these.
I know.
I'm like, don't we? Don't
and that we think to? It's we think it's unattractive when people have like big scooped ears that are probably excellent for hearing, if we're honest.
Yeah, catching those sound waves.
Catching
Why do we
them
make
all.
Fun of large ears? Honestly.
I don't know.
It seems unfair.
It does. Golden ratio
that
stuff.
That has been a thing though, like in cartoonists and all that stuff, you know, people really poke at large ears. I feel like we should nip that in the bud.
Oh, yeah. I know two people who have had a surgery to get their ears pinned back for that reason.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was very a difficult adolescence, I think.
Oh, that's hard. I understand that. I think, listen, the teasing that happens in our younger years sticks with us. I still remember the kid who said I had a unibrow in sixth grade, even though I've never had anything close to one.
No, but
and it caused me to pluck, and I overplucked one, and it's just never come back in all the way at the front, and yeah, it upsets me.
So the moral of this story is that bullies fuel the fashion and plastic surgery industries.
I think actually probably.
I know. I actually just
like if we eradicated bullying, it would probably really affect the livelihood of cosmetic surgeons.
Razor sales go down, all kinds of shit.
I think, you know, it would still be there. Like, the industries would exist, mm-hmm. sans bullies. But I do feel like perhaps the demand would just be a little less.
Yeah. Well, grade school shaming aside, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, good day, good morning, good evening. We are coming at you, not live, from still in quarantine. Welcome.
Welcome
I assume
to
you're all here with us.
Yes.
I hope you are. Welcome. And so I'm mentioning that we're still in quarantine because today, good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening to this, the kind of prompt for this topic for me was one of my friend's current, like, quarantine binge shows. And I was on, like, a FaceTime of sorts, as many
as
of us have
now,
been
yes.
recently. Yeah, as is the only way to socialize. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this, and she has gotten very into the show Hoarders.
Oh my god.
A&E fame.
That used to be my go-to vacation show. Oh my god.
I mean, I know you love this show, which then excited me, and truly I had this moment where I was like, I cannot believe we're in the fucking fourth season of this podcast.
Me either.
And we haven't talked about this yet.
Feels
because
like a day
it just
one
seems
topic.
Like something we would have talked about. Like specifically
indeed.
Us.
Indeed it does. Yeah.
Right.
And we've all had a brush or two with a hoarder.
Yeah, well, and she brought it up. And we were all just kind of talking about, like, wow, you know, I'm more sensitive of, like, the way my home is and my home environment because I'm not really leaving. Mm-hmm. And so it does call some things to attention. So I felt like this was at least very relevant for me. And she said part of the reason she feels like she's really into the show is she's like, I'm like not a hoarder. She goes, but I could like see how I could become a hoarder. And I said this, I was like, I've always thought that like I could become a hoarder. Like
hoarding
I don't think
potential.
I will. Yeah. I just think it's within me.
Sure.
You know
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah. 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 Predisposed.
And listen,
maybe.
In a dramatic fashion, when you watch an episode of the show Hoarders, again, of A&E fame, mm-hmm. They give you, like, great subtitles, like, kind of at the beginning of the show that really, really lay on the drama. And it quotes, compulsive hoarding is a mental disorder marked by an obsessive need to acquire and keep things, even if the items are worthless, hazardous, or unsanitary. Then the screen fades to black, and then emerges more text. It says, more than 3 million people are compulsive hoarders.
Oh.
And then, in a kind of a Law and Order fashion, it name drops whoever the cast of characters are in that episode and is like, these are their stories, mm-hmm. kung kung. But it doesn't really do the kung kung, but I so wish that it did. Mm-hmm. So one woman's opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the concept of hoarding or hoarders in general, right? Mm-hmm. On some level, definitely grew to like buzzworthiness.
Yes.
Through the show, right?
For sure, through the show, yeah.
So I thought, let's start there, because I feel like the show Hoarders was a little bit of like the gateway to how people began at all talking about hoarding. Do you feel like you have recollections of being really familiar with hoarding before the show Hoarders, or like the term?
I had family members who were what my family referred to as, quote, pack rats. And I now know that...
That's a good term for it, yeah.
That they were hoarders. But, like, that was my experience before seeing the A&E show. But I feel like I didn't have the term hoarders before that. And then I also feel like everyone started accusing other people of being hoarders after the show came out.
Yes.
Like, for small things, in the way that kind of after the true crime obsession wave happened, how everybody was like, oh, well, he's a sociopath, like, about their coworker.
Totally. Like, what a buzzword. Yeah, there are these things that, like, when we get them in popular culture, then it becomes, like, this thing we throw around, like, totally cavalierly, sociopath being one of them. Like, I'm sorry, not every one of your ex-boyfriends was a sociopath.
Indeed, no.
They just weren't.
Probably not, yeah.
Probably not. Or, like, I think, you know, people will say, like, someone is a compulsive liar, which compulsive liars exist, but people use that, again, in, like, a very hyperbolic way. Like, if somebody lies about something... Yeah, these words that people throw around that, you know, truly are doing some harm, probably we could acknowledge. It's probably not the best way to toss around these terms.
Probably not.
But I definitely had a family member who's, like, legit a hoarder, but I really don't know that we called it that.
Yeah, we didn't either until the show.
After the show. I love that you brought up pack rat, because that wasn't a term that came to mind, but 100%. People would say that, and I feel like we've kind of phased away from that language more towards hoarding.
And I was familiar with the pack rats from Winnie the Pooh, which I watched the new Adventures of Winnie the Pooh as a child, and the pack rats were characters who were literal rats, and they would break into the other characters' homes and steal, like, all their furniture, belongings, spoons, like, every little thing, and leave, like, walnuts in return. But the reason they were called pack rats is because they were rats, but then they hoarded everyone's stuff in their lair. And so when they would go to the pack rat's house, it was just, like, piled full of shit everywhere.
Checks out.
Checks out. And that was, yeah, that was pack rats to me. And then I had some relatives.
Okay. All right. Checks out. Well, Hoarders, which is an American reality television show, debuted on A&E, and it debuted on August 17th of 2009.
Okay.
So it's been on the air for more than 10 years. There was a little break in here. It had, like, its original run from 09 to 13. And then it stopped, and then after it was canceled, Lifetime started airing. Seems right. Like, I know, it feels totally right. They started airing, like, a series that was, like, update episodes in 2014, where they were, like, really kind of a where are they now?
Because we do.
Oh, wanna... I do.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry, never mind. Never mind. I'm compassionate as well.
Oh, my God. I always find it, like, interesting, because I mean, I don't know. It's like I'm rooting for people to, like, be better, but, like, you know, some people probably aren't.
I know, and I don't want to see that. And, like, mostly what I want to see is, like, the mess and, like, starting to clean it up.
Okay.
If I'm honest. I mean, like, I like the first half of makeover shows the best.
All right. Listen, I do you. And so they did that on Lifetime, and then it led to the production of, like, a seventh season, which was called Hoarders Family Secrets.
Oh.
And that was in 2015. And then the program returned to A&E with its eighth season at the beginning of 2016. Update episodes continued to run under the title Hoarders, Where Are They Now? And Hoarders, Then and Now. And Hoarders, Overload. Oh. Which I'm like, give it more titles. But basically, shit's still going on. And yeah, she's back. And actually, early on, it was like a, you know, like your 42 minutes, so like an hour with commercials. And now, I guess, I learned, which I didn't know, they're in, like, season 10, and they do these, like, 2 hours, so basically it's, like,
oh,
an hour
shit.
And you know, 30 and yeah. I'm 24 or whatever, that they just do one person and it's like an movie. Even longer. Yeah. I would watch a longer 100%,
100%
one.
100%.
I would. Yeah. Well, I think some of the time when you watch like the 42 minute ones, and sometimes they cover one person, but sometimes they're covering like two different stories mm-hmm. and they bounce back and forth. It really does leave you like thirsty perhaps for a little bit more of the process. Yep. But
same deal with Intervention. Same deal.
Yeah. And I think this show probably grew out of the, you know, interest in shows like Intervention.
It's the same kind of mold, yeah.
Yeah, but even the stuff like What Not to Wear, when they mm-hmm. like go in and that kind of TLC genre of...
Like we're going to bring people in and help you?
Let's self-help you, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but this is like way more dramatic because there's a lot of, you know, psychological, social stuff going mm-hmm. on here. Mm-hmm. But basically, to give you a little bit of premise of the show, if you haven't watched it, and we'll talk like initially when they're just like the 60-minute episode, that it profiles one or two interventions. So like, you know, different people who don't know each other, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, some of them, it could be like a couple who are hoarders together, or like there's one where like a family's involved, there's one where it's one person, but they'll either just do one or they'll toggle back and forth between two. And basically they bring in specialists. You have like a psychiatrist or a psychologist mm-hmm. and then somebody who's either like a professional organizer or extreme cleaning specialist.
Extreme cleaning specialists, yes.
You know, mm-hmm. and each of them basically specialize in some aspect of the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorders, mm-hmm. anxiety disorders, and or hoarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's usually a crew of like professional cleaners. I feel like you always see people from like 1-800-JUNK or like whatever it is.
Lots of dumpsters, mm-hmm. lots of masks, yeah, hazmat that suits are like, once in a while.
Totally. And the people who are hoarding and like oftentimes their family or partners or whoever are like involved in cleaning up. But like, I mean, these jobs are like enormous. So there is a crew and they're doing it in like a television timeline and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. So they go through, they're working with people, they're talking about perhaps the root of the problem. And one of the things that I learned that made me like very happy, they actually, like, the television crew, whatever, after the show provides, like, 6 months of aftercare funds to help pay, like, the professionals and or, like, therapists, and occasionally, like, help, you know, facilitate some sort of, like, vital home repairs that may need to happen, like, after the fact, mm-hmm. which I was like, wow, that's, like, really nice.
I did actually remember that from watching it because I was also surprised by that fact.
Yeah, because I just feel like oftentimes... But you can't just
leave people hanging. Like, here, we're going to take all of your bad coping mechanisms away from you, but then just leave.
Right, but I think, like, in these kind of, like, quick format shows where there's some big project, we're, like, so used to, like, the Extreme Makeover Home Edition or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, they fucking do your house, and then they're like, deuces! And I just... Yeah, I just... It surprised me in a nice way, but I was like, good. I'm glad we're recognizing, you know, that there should be, like, a psychologist or psychiatrist involved, and that, like, they probably need to keep talking to people when this is said and done.
Absolutely. So. There's a responsibility there, especially since you're using these people for entertainment. Like, you gotta help them after.
Oh, you got... I mean, you've got to. Like, hello. So that's generally Hoarders, and I watched an episode. I've seen many episodes, I feel like, in my heyday, but I watched an episode while I was prepping for this, and it was two different women. There was a woman with like grown sons who she had like hoarded her way basically out of her house and then was like living with one of her sons, and then her son, his partner could like no longer handle his mom being there and like she made their place messy, so then they were like together, but he and his husband were living like separately. It was very intense. And so there's like a lot of family dynamic stuff going on. And then there was another woman who had 5 children, and I think 2 of them were still in the house, and then her husband, and her family was like, you like just was so like up in arms and like, we're trying to get you to take this seriously and help you and all the things. And she was very combative. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I felt like one, the combative mom was the second woman I mentioned. Her name was Deborah.
Deborah, yes.
And the other woman, her name was Patty. And I feel like I rooted more for Patty because she was a little less argumentative.
Better attitude.
I don't know.
It's hard.
Yeah, she had
not
a way better
root.
Attitude. Like, I just felt like she was like, I like trust in the process or whatever, and was like not trying to hold on to stuff. She was like, get rid of it.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There are very few times. I feel like a lot of times they have to distract the hoarder to like sort a pile in a dark room away from everyone while they like secretly throw out most of the things.
Right. You do kind of feel like that has to be the thing. And it's interesting because, I don't know, you watch the show and there are people who are really, I don't know, trying to do it and like change. And then you feel like there are people who are very resistant.
Mm-hmm. And then I kind of wonder why they said yes to the show, but do go on.
Yeah, you do wonder, and maybe they felt like, you know, maybe the people in their life were pressuring them into it, mm-hmm. or I don't know. But it was interesting to watch, and it was interesting to have these two people, like, juxtaposed, and just, like, so many different things come up. And if you're interested in this specific episode, season 6, episode 1, it's on Hulu.
Excellent.
But I watched these gals, and Deborah, there was, like, a lot of, like, shopaholic kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and hoarding of clothing. And I also, like, she said things that it just sparked things, because I guess to this point I had with my friend who's been watching the show, where we were like, I could be a hoarder, like, I could see this.
Mm-hmm.
And so her shopping stuff, you know, one of her sons at some point mentions like a lot of online shopping, there's always like a parcel showing up. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, it's really never been easier than it is now in terms mm-hmm. of like technology to like keep bringing stuff into your home that you both don't need and or can't afford, because oftentimes when people are hoarding, you know, there are other things with like health issues and the cleanliness, but it also can be a huge like financial that people are spending money they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm like, you know what, if everything you buy, like your credit card info saved and it's just a couple quick clicks, like I personally find it for sure easier. Like you don't think necessarily as hard about a purchase when you're just like doing it on your phone than you do.
Oh no, I've
like,
drunk
you know,
ordered a rug before in the middle of the night.
Or be right. Of course you have. I love that.
It happens.
Also, we've all done. I just feel like everyone's done that at this point. But like, you don't have to think as hard about it. But like, if you were out in the store, if you were like, you know, in a rug shop or whatever, a home goods store, you would be thinking a lot harder and more critically about
the rug. And I would have
rug.
To be like, damn, this will barely fit in my car. Like, this is a whole thing. I'm gonna have to take it up the stairs to my place. Like, it's way more difficult. You are correct.
Totally. So I was thinking about that stuff with Deborah. I was like, wow, you know, like the shopaholic stuff and, you know, kind of wanting that joy or like trying to seek like the fulfillment in the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like most people can relate to that, truly.
Little rush?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And it's often, like, the best feeling, like, in almost like a drug addict kind of way, is, like, the anticipation of the hit of dopamine of getting the thing. Like, once you have the thing, it's, like, whatever.
Well, then online ordering becomes the most attractive option because you have like already paid for it and it's on its way and you get to anticipate for a few days.
And it's just so fucking easy to do,
right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 1 a.m, taking that hit, ordering some shit that you don't need. Oh yeah.
Right. 100%. And then with Patty, the other woman who I felt like was just like way more on board for the whole, the process and was just like, yeah, let's get rid of it.
Cooperative Patty. Yeah.
Yeah, I really felt like she didn't want her home to be like that. She didn't want to do that anymore, but it was the feeling of like, this is so daunting and it's gotten so out of control. Like,
I can't fix it alone.
Right. You couldn't do it alone, or just like the process seems too hard to even start, which I felt like on a scaled back thing, like, how many times have any of us been like, oh, I'm gonna like clean out that closet, or like I'm gonna go through like my clothes and like consign, or like, you know, make the Goodwill pile, mm-hmm. and like that feels too big sometimes. It's like those are the kind of tasks
that can be
like
a whole damn
of,
day.
Like, yeah, and I think oftentimes that has us put it off of like going through your bookshelf or your closet or whatever that thing is that you're like, yeah, I really want to do that, but like It just feels like too big of a project. Overwhelming.
Then you add a little sprinkle of mental illness and like multiply that closet times 1,000 and it's really fucking difficult.
Right. And so I felt for her and I was like, I get this. And they were talking about it seemed like she had a very like basically shitty marriage situation that
previously then, or know, currently?
Previously. Okay. And her husband left her for another woman ultimately, but like had a drinking problem and was like a lot of infidelity.
Mm.
And that's, they were kind of saying when she started hoarding. And I was like, well, yeah, she just like was trying to control fucking mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. because her marriage probably felt like out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh.
Which in a lot of ways then like reminded me of, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talk about around like eating disorders mm-hmm. and disordered eating. And they're very much related in kind of the psychology realm. So.
And there's an obsessive compulsive Venn diagram there with the, with mm-hmm. those things as well.
Totally. And it was just super interesting. So hoarding is like the disorder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Came out with the release of the DSM-5 in 2013.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
In that, hoarding was classified as a separate disorder.
Hmm.
So in some ways, you're like, what did the show have shit to do with that? Because right. during the show's original run, hoarding behaviors were considered symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD. And hoarding does show links to obsessive and compulsive behaviors.
Sure.
But it also shows connections to major depressive disorder mm-hmm. as well as actually ADHD, which I thought was interesting.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I feel like there is maybe times when I've become like more disorganized or like not known how to like prioritize getting rid of certain things. Like my brain has felt maybe like a little more disorganized. And so I don't know, I could see maybe a lack of focus or attention. Maybe it's harder to start a project. I'm spitballing over here, you know?
Totally. And in the reading that I did, you know, hoarding could have simply remained basically like a symptom that had been included under multiple disorders,
mm-hmm.
but treating it, you know, as its own disorder in a patient often doesn't eliminate the hoarding behaviors.
Mm.
And so another significant factor in the disorder's reclassification was the discovery that more people could be diagnosed with hoarding behaviors than could actually be diagnosed with OCD.
So this is a coping mechanism, basically. This is a sure. super unhealthy coping mechanism that's not necessarily associated with specifically OCD or some other specific mental illness.
Well, it doesn't have to be, but like it can be.
Right.
Basically,
right.
this square kind and a of rectangle. Figuring of... Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Because basically, like, this shows that hoarding could be, like, a subtype of OCD, but it could also not be yeah. a subtype of yeah. OCD.
I mean, tons of other mental illnesses have features like that, that sometimes are borrowed by another illness or overlap or stand alone. So, yeah.
Totally. And so it had to be, you know, a separate illness with similarities. Mm-hmm. Like, the fear of letting go being the obsession and hoarding, you know, the unneeded stuff right. as the compulsion. And so those similarities are recognized in the DSM-5 as hoarding is classified under obsessive compulsive related mm-hmm. disorders.
Mm-hmm.
But other disorders in that category like include things like body dysmorphic disorder,
mm-hmm.
Trichotillomania, which is when you like pull your yeah. hair out.
Mm-hmm.
And then excoriation, which is like when you pick like at your skin.
Yeah.
And basically, like, all of those disorders share common features such as obsessive preoccupation and repetitive behaviors, which mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I didn't think about, like, the repetition part of hoarding, but, like, either. Yeah, that is there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the role of the documentary show, like Hoarders and some other stuff that I feel like was on television at the time, like, did it play into the change in classification? Not really clear. But a lot of people believe that the rise in awareness mm-hmm. caused by the show was a significant contributing factor. And when hoarding became a buzzword, you know, it kind of commands more a professional of attention, course. Right?
Yeah.
And so studies that have taken place may have been prompted by that, which helped reveal, you know, that the disorder was unique and complex.
Yeah,
and
cultural awareness.
Not just OCD.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, yeah, totally interesting. And researchers, though, have recognized like compulsive hoarding as a phenomenon, if you will, mm-hmm. since at least the 80s, according to stuff that I read. But
only I had more family recently. Members doing it surely since before
oh,
then.
People
based
have been
on
doing
the
it since
I
the
saw
dawn of time.
In 1995.
People probably were doing this in caves.
They were.
Like, yeah.
All the
like
rocks.
Keeping bones. Yep. You know, like, we don't know. But people have only really begun to recently study it.
Sure, yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
And which makes sense because it wasn't even recognized in the DSM until like 7 years ago. So.
And people just weren't talking about this kind of shit. Like if you were a hoarder back in the day, you'd probably just be like, oh, my house is under construction. We'll have to go to your house for happy hour. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I'm sure I think not even back in the day. I'm sure that's happening live. You
it's
know what I mean?
Also happening live. Yes, yes.
Totally. But it was interesting to me. So in terms of prevalence rates, it's been estimated at like 2% to 5% in adults.
Mm.
But one of the things that I read that I thought was super interesting was that the condition typically manifests in childhood with symptoms worsening in advanced age, at which point your like collection of items base, you know, grows.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if there are other people helping you maintain it, like family members, people you shared a home with, the levels, you know, reach a point that people can't help you, or the people who used to help you have like, maybe they're your parents, maybe they've died, maybe they moved away, mm-hmm. like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting though, that it was brought up that it occurred like in children mostly because
mm-hmm.
on my favorite Canadian teen drama,
Degrassi,
it goes there. That was a tagline, I feel like, for some of their later seasons.
They have teen hoarders on Degrassi?
Listen, so on the, not like the pure original, like the first iteration of Degrassi with Spike and Snake. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then that was in the 80s. And then when we were like middle schoolish, there was Degrassi, the next generation.
Yes.
And that was like Aubrey Drake Graham, then became Drake and other people, right?
Other people, yeah.
Your favorite girl, Cassie Steele, who you love. Jamie loves Cassie Steele. Anyway.
It's okay.
I'm not shaming you for it. I love Degrassi. But then, so that was the next generation. And then at some point after the next generation, they have like the next class, which is like an even later subset.
Gen
have
Z.
I seen every episode ever made? Absolutely. So all of that said, on the later part of the next generation, when it was like no longer Drake and mm-hmm. crew, like those people have graduated.
Paige was gone. Yeah.
Paige was gone. They're not even doing the college years of Paige that they did for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite characters who ever appears in the whole series is in that kind of sweet spot. And he's like, his name is Eli. He's like very goth. And like, he's exactly what you want in a teen melodrama. He's like a good bad boy. You know? It's what I want in a middle school romance.
Of course.
It's what I want from a seventh grader.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is a hoarder.
Oh.
And it begins like, it's like early in his arc. And I remember thinking when I saw this, I was like, there's like a whole storyline of how his girlfriend, like before the that you never meet,
mm-hmm.
was like riding her bike and like got hit by a car.
Oh.
And there were, and a lot of like social things that were going on at the time.
A
like
teen with
this
a dead lover.
Well, yeah. Well, I think like they had a fight and somehow he thought this was his fault.
Oh,
and then
boy.
He started hoarding shit. So there was like, it was an exciting incident. We learned all about
mm-hmm.
it. And I remember thinking, I was like, this is so dumb. Like, on some level, like, I was enthralled with the storyline. I loved it. But I was like, young people aren't hoarders. And then when I was doing my research on this, I was like, I am wrong. I was like, young people are hoarders. But, like, it's, like, contained to their room because
mm-hmm.
their mom, you know. And that's basically, that was his storyline. It wasn't, like, their whole house or something.
Yeah.
But, like,
I feel
his
like
room and his locker.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I loved it because then I was like, oh, like lockers,
mm-hmm.
like that's
whatever your
whole thing.
Your private space, whatever that is.
Yeah. And he has a whole freak out because the girl that he's like dating tries to do something nice for him and she like cleans up his locker.
Uh-oh.
And he's like a meltdown.
Yeah, that's a deeper issue, ma'am. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So shout out, listen, there is a great arc of Eli on later episodes of Degrassi Next Gen, and it involves a hoarding storyline, so you're welcome.
Not often a hot teen topic, but this just in, you can check it out.
And it felt so right for him because he was like the goth kid. Like he wore eyeliner. It was like everything I wanted.
And he has 50 eyeliners in his bedroom.
At least, like minimum, you know? But it was very interesting. And I loved that they had this arc in there. And I was interested to learn that it actually is something that usually manifests in younger people. I was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Little off-the-cuff stat from me to call back to the Myers-Briggs episode and discussions, as we sometimes do.
Please do.
People with introverted thinking as a function are more likely to hoard than other people. So, like, extroverted thinking is, like, how to get it done, and introverted thinking is more of a categorization system. And so people who are, like, prone to categorize a lot of things are apparently also more prone to hoard and not be able to see, like, the benefits of decluttering.
It also makes me think, and I don't know this factually, but we did an episode where we talk about the Big Five, another personality quiz, and one of them talks about conscientiousness, which is, like, your relationship with, like, space and things and like losing things and that kind of thing. Just your general spatial awareness and stuff. And I was like, huh, I wonder if people who have like a lower conscientiousness would be like more likely to hoard.
I had the lowest score of all time in conscientiousness. It was a 3 out of 100.
Yeah, it was crazy. That was so, I mean, if you haven't listened to the Big Five episode, like I think the lowest score either one of us had on something. Like, I think the lowest score I had on anything was in the 60s or 70s or something, so. Yeah. And Jamie had a 3.
Yeah.
Do with it's that okay. what you will.
I'm not a hoarder, though, so maybe other You're parts not, of my no. personality and my various mental illnesses are not prone to hoarding.
Well, I wasn't saying, like, if you don't have, like, if you're not very conscientious, you're destined to be a hoarder.
It's correlation, not causation.
Exactly. Same with the Myers-Briggs stuff, but it's interesting to think about if, like, who would be prone to this, and certainly...
Earth signs, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the interesting thing. So I got interested in wanting to talk about this for the episode because my friend and I were talking about being like, I feel like I could be a hoarder. Like, I have that, like,
it's
propensity.
In me.
Right, like, it's inside of me. And I think for sure... I've thought a lot about my physical space. Like, I mean, I always do, but I think like even more in quarantine that like, you know, maybe if you have that pile of shit on your desk in the other room, if you're never leaving your house, it feels like a little
you
bit
see
crazier
it a lot.
To have that.
Yeah,
you see it every, you're seeing it a lot. Listen, but I, you know, I've been thinking about the space and I've certainly been doing a little bit of, you know, tidying up. I'm like, well, I'm at home. Like, now is the time to, you know, zhuzh this area of the closet or whatever.
These organization projects, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally a good time for that. I went through the kitchen junk drawer, etc. But I think it's kind of interesting because I was reflecting in this conversation on the things about me that I feel like are a little hoarder-y or could be. And I'd be curious to hear if you feel like you have anything like mine or anything that's like completely different. Because I think one of the things that's interesting to think about with hoarding is that there's a difference between hoarding and materialism, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Like, these aren't the same things. And, like, being materialistic, you know, really assigning, like, worth and value of a person based on, like, the stuff that they have, right? Or, like, the stuff that you have. But I think that I can be kind of precious about certain things.
Yeah.
And hear me out on this. So I feel like generationally, we're maybe like a little bit different perhaps than the baby boomers in terms of how we use our stuff, in that I feel like Gen X, millennials, Gen Zers, we're a little less like, this is my nice dress, this is the nice china. Like, we use what we have. And I'm really about that life. Like, I'm like, I don't ever want to own clothes that I couldn't just like wear whenever I feel like it, that I'm never going to have something that I'm like, oh, I can only wear that on a special occasion. If I had, you know, the nice china, I'd use it because I'm like, what's good in having something nice if I don't enjoy it with these, you know, material objects, whatever it is. Like, I'm like, if this is like the nice bowl or the nice whatever, I'm like, I'm going to get it out when I'm eating by myself. Right. Like, not just to entertain.
And I think we are more experience driven than them as a generation.
Definitely more experience driven. And so, which true, like, just as a side note, people think is like psychologically positive that actually, like, if you true happiness is usually more of a like a symptom of experiences mm-hmm. rather than items. So jot that down.
Just jot truly it
something
down.
We can all enjoy. Mm-hmm. But so I'm not precious about, like, you know, the clothes or like the dishes or like if, you know,
you
the
don't
nice
have plastic
towels.
Over your furniture.
Right. But I can be kind of precious about stuff that is like expendable, like that gets used up.
Mm, okay. Say more.
If that makes sense. So like, I sometimes, like, I don't want to use something because I don't want to not have it anymore.
Sure, yeah.
So, like, if I use, like, my nice glassware to, you know, sometimes I drink fucking Topo Chico out of a coupe because I like it. Mm-hmm. Like, my glassware doesn't go away. Like, I, you know, yes, goes, renewable I wash resource, it and then it's back yeah. in the cabinet. Exactly. Right. But, like, if I have, you know, a special, quote unquote, like, bottle of something, like, something nice to drink, I'm like, oh, if I, like, use it, if I drink it, then I, like, don't have it anymore. And I think sometimes I worry. I'm like, oh, like, can I use this? And I would say, like, again, some things that are, like, expendable. Like, I think I definitely have some makeup that... It's, like, past its prime or I don't even really wear, but, like, I don't want to throw away because I don't want to not have it.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not really using it.
Yeah.
But it's these, like, expendable things, if that makes sense, that I'm like, oh, I don't want to, like, you know, drink that bottle of port because I don't want to not have that bottle of port. Which I'm like, but what's the point in having the bottle of port if you don't drink it?
But I do see what you're saying about how that could be, like, hoarding adjacent because... What you're describing feels similar to me of, like, a lot of feelings that I had in art school. Like, I would come across, like, supplies or, like, I would see someone, like, throwing away, like, pieces of wood or, like, a chair or something. And I would be like, oh, shit, like, I should get that and put it in my basement because, like, I'll probably use it for a project. Like, I'll need the material, like, at some point. And it's the feeling of, like, it's not that I want the object to use right now. It's that, like... in some kind of projected future scenario, I might need it.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, definitely a thing you see, like, on hoarders, and I think we all know people who are like that, that even sometimes in, like, a sweet way, I feel like parents can do that, or, like, grandparents for kids, that it's like, well, let me save this thing because somebody else might want it. And it's like, fuck, if somebody else wants it, unless it's, like, an antique or an heirloom, like, they're just gonna get, like, the new one, you know?
Yeah, let's just keep Goodwill's doors open and go ahead and donate.
But you know what I mean? There's something to that. There's, like, well, somebody else might want this in, like, a way that...
the forever possibility of an item being needed. Like, being locked into so many potential futures of needing all of these things rather than, like... accepting that, like, yeah, maybe I threw away this plastic Ziploc bag because it was used and I didn't have a home for it, and now I have to buy one 6 months later. But, like, did you even remember where the Ziploc bag that you saved was?
Right. Or I think one that's interesting that people can be, like, really savvy about is, like, cardboard boxes, you know, maybe that end up in the garage or the basement or whatever. Because people are like, well, what if I have to move? Or what if someone I know has to move?
No. That's the line. It's if you do not have a moving date creeping up that you're aware of, okay, you don't need them. Then if you don't know anyone right now actively who needs them, you'll come across other boxes. You will.
And they're boxes, you don't have to buy them. They're very easy to get. But that's one of those things that I think people can do that, like, oh, I might need this later. To your point of, like, that art school vibe of, like, oh, this supply might be helpful later.
Later. And then for you, it's almost a step further of, like, well, I could have this drink right now, but then I won't have it later.
Yeah, and I use, like, alcohol, but it's also, like, it's I kind of do that, I feel like, with, like, food items. It's like, oh, I don't want to use, like, this good olive oil because then I, like, won't have the good olive oil anymore. But I'm like, what's the point of having the good olive oil if you don't use it?
Sure,
like, that
yeah.
kind of silly stuff. Or, like, yeah. you know, some kind of, like, gifted spice or something that somebody gave
me.
And I'm like,
spice.
Yeah, what if I... People do give me spices. I have more like than one. Like the
baby Jesus, yeah.
I mean, listen, I am not Christ-like in any capacity, but I would really appreciate a gift of spices, always.
Honestly, I would too.
It might be my only compliment to Jesus. Look, I don't know. Bring me the frankincense okay. and the
hot
myrrh.
Takes. Yeah.
It might be the only thing we have in common. We can't know. I don't know. I feel like the man and I are a little different, but yeah. We can't know.
You're both Enneagram 2s, though.
I don't believe that he was a 2.
I've got my feelings.
I disagree. Okay. But all of this said, I do think about that of like the goofy things, and I'm like, oh, is that a little hoardery? And it does, like, thinking about this and reflecting on it make me want to be like, don't put off using like things just to put off using them. I don't know. Aside from like art school, you know, save for later, do you feel like you have any things that you're like, why am I doing that? Is that a little like dialed back hoardery?
I think when I was a little kid, I had a harder time with this, and I don't know if some of it comes from just like when you're a little kid, you're kind of figuring out the idea of like something being yours. And so definitely as a child, I would like save things that I didn't need, or like rubber bands that came off of like my grandma's office supplies that she ordered and shit in I had like a lily pad purse that I would just pack full of shit that I would never, ever need. But I always was like, I'll need this.
Right.
But no, as an adult, and I remember that feeling of like, I'm going to need these things. So I need to like continue to scavenge for them. But as an adult, I more have like some leftover art school hoarder feelings for sure. Like I have a door that I got at Habitat Restore that's just like sitting on my porch because I haven't used it for the project that I was gonna do, a woodworking project, and like make a swing. So for me, I think like a lot of projects that don't pan out lead to like some light hoarding of materials a la art school.
But do you have a hard time getting rid of something if you buy it for a project and you then, you know, get distracted or put off the project or aren't sure if you're going to do it anymore or whatever? Do you have a hard time like giving up the resource for the project?
Yes, because I feel like it could always be repurposed, and I'm like, well, that's like still decent wood, so like I'll cut it up and like it'll just be used for something else, so there's no reason to get rid of it. But I also don't like to live places for that long. So I feel
that's
like...
That's true, you don't.
So I feel like some of my maybe like nomad feelings, or like I also moved a lot growing up, and we would get rid of a lot of stuff when we moved, and like I would fully clean out my closet. Like I'd get rid of a lot of clothes and stuff. And so I kind of feel like I am a better mover for that reason. But I kind of always have like... I desire the ability to move easily. And so I think that for me counteracts what would be maybe like creative hoarder feelings.
Okay.
In that, like, yes, I value having all of these materials on deck, but I also value like lightness of my stuff. Like I would like it to, I love to not have a ton of stuff. Like next week I want to go through my closet and pare it down to like fucking 10 things that I love.
Yeah, I mean, that's real. I think there's something to that. And it's funny, like, I think maybe we've all had the pang of, like, getting rid of something that then later we were like, oh, I wish I had that.
For
like,
sure.
I've had that certainly with, like, clothing items, I think, are the ones that come to mind. It's really the only time I'm like...
I save the wrong ones.
Yeah, I do feel that way. And so it's funny, like... It'll be, like, one thing that I'd be like, oh, man, you know what? I really wish I still had, like, that jacket. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever it was.
It's usually a jacket.
I love outerwear, and I just, like, I do have those moments, and I think sometimes it's the pang of, like, the occasional time I'm like, I wish I still had that thing, it'd be perfect for whatever. And this, like, selective memory, because it's, like, this emotion that you actually remember, you're like, oh, fuck, I should have kept that. But you know how many things I've gotten rid of in my lifetime that I've never thought that about?
Way more. Way more.
Right.
Yeah.
Way more shit. And so I do think there's maybe something like kind of selectively emotional about having a hard time getting rid of anything, because the times that you remember that, like the, you know, handful of times you felt remiss about not having whatever it was anymore, you know?
Oh yeah. And we remember negative experiences, unfortunately, better than like neutral or positive ones. Sometimes we don't remember neutral at all. So yeah, those handful of times when we should have saved something do really color our ability to throw other shit away.
Right. And should have saved. Like, what an interesting phrase. Like, oh, I should have saved that. Like, I don't know. How often is that really true?
I can't think of anything right now. Oh, one thing. Yeah, there's a sewing machine what table I wish I would have not
what
gotten
is it?
Rid of.
I want to know.
When I lived in California, I found... Well, this is... I'm going to tell this story really quickly. So...
Tell it.
I found this, like, amazing, like, mid-century sewing table with, like, a fold-down side that I was going to use as kind of, like, a sideboard at a thrift store where I lived in Pasadena. And so, like, I purchased it. They put a sticker on it. And I was like, cool, I'll be back tomorrow when you open with a truck to take this to my apartment. And when I showed up, it was gone. And I was like, cool, but like I already paid for it. And they were like, yeah, we're not allowed to give a refund because like no one here is a manager. And I'm standing there. I'm like, here's the thing, though. Yeah, a refund would be great, but you're denying me that. But like mostly I would like the sewing machine table that I purchased that I had plans for. But luckily there was somehow a different and similar sewing machine table in the back, and I was getting upset, and I finally convinced the employee to just like let me take the other one, which was of lesser value, just like as an even trade. And eventually I did really love that sewing machine table. I would have loved it if I found it first, but it was just not originally what I wanted. Anyway, when I moved...
Yeah, you can get weird feelings when you're like, yeah, but this wasn't the first one.
I didn't choose it, yeah. But I did love it later, so I had to really pare down what I was moving with when I left that apartment, and so that was one of the things that I got rid of. But I have, like, consistently wished that I had chosen to get rid of something else.
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, that's sad. That's brutal.
It is, because I just can't find furniture like that in the Midwest. It's just different.
Yeah.
Not secondhand, at least.
No, that's real. That's totally real. That's hard. And it is. It's those things that, like, nag on you that make it, I think, somewhat, like, more of an obstacle when you're, like, trying to purge some of your shit in the moment. What's the hardest area for you to, like, purge or get rid of shit in your life these days?
Honestly, just any, it's still the art school feelings. It's anything that like drawing paper, like paints, anything that's like a weird adhesive or like, I don't know, old photos, like sometimes small pieces of furniture, pieces of wood. It's stuff like that. That I'm just like, I'd like to have a base of materials to just kind of gaze upon if I want to make something. And, you know, if you're not moving around, that's like fine to have in like a basement or a garage. Cool. Like my grandpa filled his house with wood for that reason.
Sure.
But I don't really have it in other spaces. I don't feel like, no. Maybe computer files. I wish that I was more proactive about deleting them, but I always am like,
oh, that's
but what if
real.
I need,
that's an interesting thing.
What if
thing.
I need to access this again? Yeah.
What if I need all 10,000 screenshots I took on my iPhone for, like, you know, some other day?
What if the timestamps are somehow going to be relevant to a court case I'm involved in? We can't ever know. Yeah.
We can't ever know. No, that's like, I mean, truly, that's, I hadn't even thought about the technology, like, bit of stuff. That's interesting.
People
like,
just buying external memory after hard drives, whatever, external hard drive after external hard drive.
Well, and actually, I think a lot of us can be, I don't know, oddly precious about, like, even, like, emails. Some people, it's like you can't, like, delete certain things or, like, text messages and, like, your text history. Don't take my text history away from me. I fucking fight you on that.
Yeah, I don't want that gone either.
I know, it's silly, isn't it? But that's interesting because I hadn't even thought about, like, the data we're hoarding, which could potentially be a problem, but it's less visible. Doesn't take up the same kind of space. But space in our minds and hearts, so... jot that one
and
down.
Soon we'll all be charged for the cloud, so you know,
truly. So I don't know, like, those are, I guess, our own, like, hoarding feeling juju, but do you have any, I don't know, feelings about other people's hoarding juju or like experiences with that in life. You alluded to maybe knowing some folks who are hoarders.
And I think that maybe my contact with hoarders at an early age is part of why I feel like maybe I could never do that. But when I was a kid, I think just kind of luck of the draw, because I was an only child and I had young parents, and then they were like house project people. We ended up helping a lot of older family members like move out of their homes. And okay. I don't know if it's like a generational thing that I haven't seen a lot elsewhere, or like if it's just luck of the draw, these particular family members all like were hoarders. But I just remember repeatedly like going into these houses and there would be like a tiny little path to walk, and there's like,
oh damn,
boxes, like those cardboard boxes with like the cardboard lid that fits over them for files,
like a file box.
Yeah, just like stacked up everywhere. And like some rooms that like the door was closed and we would open it, and it was just like, in one house it was like piles and piles and piles and piles of clothes, and then like one corner with just like exclusively plastic bags. And
oh shit,
I don't want to be shitty about it, but like I was five, and so like my reaction was just like feeling like really dirty about it, I think, because there was like, you know, the house has like a particular smell, and like
totally
there's, you know, like a lot of old stuff everywhere. And so I think that I just mostly felt really uncomfortable and was like, wow, I would never ever want to do this. And this is what I'm talking about like pack rats. But I do wonder if any of that has played into like later my feelings about like the show hoarders. And then also I don't know. Hoarding is like actually something that I think about quite a bit whenever I'm like purging a closet or cleaning a drawer. And I do think of like these older family members when I'm going through my things and trying to decide what to keep. And there is like that feeling in the back of my mind of like, if I hang on to too many things, like I could become these people. And I think that doesn't feel good.
No, that's real. And I feel like I, in general, you know, I feel like a stocked pantry and a lot of plants, but I feel like I run like pretty lean in general. I'm not particularly, I don't need to hold on to books I read, because unless I like have some real sentimental attachment to it. And like, I don't really have a hard time going through the closet and getting rid of clothes. I actually love getting rid of clothes.
I know, it feels great. Yeah.
Yeah, I love to consign to it.
Calendar, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's something to that I do think. And you mentioning the cleanliness thing, I mean, we didn't talk about it too much and talk more like, you know, a little bit of psychology and, you know, things that we feel some kind of way about keeping. But on the show, if you watch Hoarders, I mean, you deal with like when these things really roll out of control, so many like just cleanliness and
skeletons
pest issues
filling the attic.
Well, I mean, there was one where the cleaner guy who, like, specializes in hoarding, when on this episode I watched, when he was in Patty's house, he was like, well, you know, when it's this bad, he goes, I know that there are, like, rats and snakes in this house. And I was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Like, just even the thoughts of that.
And when
like,
the piles of things are so dense that, like, the bottom of the pile has started to, like, break down and is just kind of, like, sediment.
Right. Yeah.
There was something I called permacrud in my backpack as a child, because I was very disorganized in my own little spaces. I had to keep a tight room at home, but like my desk at school and my backpack were a shit show. So
I'm of the firm believer that you're messy because you had to keep it tight at home.
Yeah. I was just letting it all hang out everywhere else. So I called the bottom third of my backpack the permacrud after I learned
about... Is this just where there's, like, broken pencils and...
It's just debris. Like, you reach into it and it's like, is it soft? Like, what is this? This is just fragments of old paper, eraser shavings, pencils crushed, old food. I don't know. It could be anything. Foil. Permacrud.
Like a layer of the earth. I see you, earth science.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Circa fourth grade.
I love that about you.
Thank you.
Well, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, do we pivot and wrap this hoarding moment up into a verbal game?
We sure do. All right, so we'll cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. Okay, so I have a would you rather for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, because I kind of want to talk this one out, because I don't know what I would do offhand. Totally.
Okay. Yeah.
But would you rather grow up and be raised by hoarders in a hoarding house, like, until you're like 18 and you toodle-doo?
Right.
Or would you rather get married, we'll say, like, at 35,
mm-hmm.
35, 40, something like that. Like, at that age, like, you, like, find your partner, you, like, move in, whatever. Your life continues. You're, like, with this person forever. And they're a hoarder. Like, would you want to be partnered with a hoarder, right, like, later in life?
Originate from it.
Or originate from hoarding.
I feel like the question here is, like, would it be more difficult to, like, overcome my own psychological baggage from growing up hoarding? Or would it be more difficult to, like, try to change my partner? So,
Neither one of these people are going to get help. Like, your family's house is always going to be like this, and your partner is always going to be like this.
I think that I would choose to come from it in the hopes that, like, I would be able to, like, with my non-hoarding partner in the future, we could have, like, a home together that maybe my issues with hoarding wouldn't be exacerbated. But I think that marrying someone who was an active hoarder or who became a hoarder would be so difficult to deal with, because it's like, I don't know, actually. Is it easier to deal with, like, an active problem than a learned behavior? I don't know.
Well, I don't feel like if I was raised by hoarders, I would be a hoarder.
I don't think I would be. I think I'd be the opposite.
Yeah, I feel like I would swing, like, really hard into, like, minimalism or something. But, but part of me is, like, I just feel like it would be so traumatic for your parents to be, like, total hoarders.
Yeah, and I think, like, the knowledge that they were still hoarders would be hard.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
Just the feeling of probably, like, yes, relief from leaving, but, like, helplessness to change it in a way that, like, if it were your partner in your home, like, you're less helpless. But I would still choose, I think, to come from hoarding. And then, whoops, sorry, I'm going to throw all your shit away when I think it's time to get rid of it.
Oh, wow. You guys be fighting a lot.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. Would you, would rather actively combat the hoarding?
I think, yeah, maybe. I think it's interesting, because I think, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, well, maybe I'd rather come from it, because part of the issue is like, okay, I got these two hoarding household options. I think I'd be as, like, the child of hoarding, or, like, the partner of hoarding, I think I'd feel, like, a little secondhand embarrassment, like, in either situation.
But you didn't choose your family, but you did choose your spouse.
Right. But then I feel like the other thing, too, is, like, you know, my parents' house is, like, my parents' house. It's not, like, my house in the same way.
Right.
And there's this part of me that I think I'd, like, maybe rather my parents be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, me too.
Hoarders than me be a hoarder.
And I don't want to deal with it on the daily.
You said you'd rather have a partner who hoarded.
No, 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 no.
Are you changing your mind now?
No, no, no. Sorry. That I probably talked against myself in, like, a devil's advocate way, but I my real answer was that I would rather originate from a hoarding household.
Okay.
Because it's too much to deal with it every day, to have it in your life. Like, you have a partner who's got, like, compulsive thoughts about it, and I just,
I think that'd be very hard. But I will say, Deborah, on that episode I watched, man, her sons were really having a hard time, and it makes me have a harder time stomaching, like, if you were a kid in that situation, because it just seemed really tough.
Yeah, that is tough.
I think both my parents, for me to want to come from it, they'd both have to be hoarders.
And sometimes it happens.
Well, so that they weren't fighting about the hoarding. That seemed very tumultuous.
Oh, that would be just as hard as having double hoarders, actually. Yeah.
Right.
Yikes. Yeah. Yikes.
Yikes.
Well, I have a quick would you rather for you as well.
Hit me with it.
So, obviously, in the vein of hoarding, you're going to hoard just one item.
Oh, great.
Would you rather hoard used condoms, not necessarily, like, from your partners and others that you find, or,
like, if I see one on the street, I'll pick it up?
Yes. Or okay, cool. Would you rather hoard microwaves and refrigerators?
Condoms.
Because of the size issues?
Yes. Look, 100%. I'm just going to have like a Foot Locker in the basement full of condoms, which is like so gross. I don't even know how I'd explain that. But like, where would I put the fridges? I mean, what would you do?
What if it was only microwaves?
Where would I put them? I can't.
I know. I don't know where you'd put them. I would start screwing them together and trying to make art pieces, running a TV through them. I was going to say it would be
like totally like an art installation if you had that many microwaves. But
yeah, or if I
would
was...
You,
go ahead.
Would you do the microwaves or would
Hell
you do
no.
condoms?
Yeah. Yeah.
Condoms.
Yeah.
Use condoms.
Just for Here space reasons. It's too much. Microwaves
it's
are bulky
too,
as hell.
The rest are too big. Yeah.
And also microwaves. I'm like, I don't. Are you just like emitting radiation from being there? I don't know.
You're one of those people who's worried about the microwaves.
I might be. And refrigerators, mm-hmm. old ones have Freon, so you better not be collecting the old refridge, you know?
That's true. That is true.
Just leaking.
Huh.
Leaking the Freon.
Well, listen, if you're leaking Freon, go to a doctor.
Please.
But as always, you can, I don't know, let us know about your feelings about hoarding. If you feel like you... Two could like slide down a hoarding scope like some of us feel like we could.
Yeah.
Or if you're like it's so foreign or just like if you are a hoarder or you have hoarding experiences, really just any flavor of hoarding.
Or if you compulsively throw things away.
There's another end of the spectrum here for sure. And we didn't even talk about it, but that's real. That is real. But all that said, you can let us know on the internet and you can do so via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com. On Instagram at Why You Like This Pod and on Twitter at WAYLT Tweets. And good day, good morning, happy quarantines.
Happy quarantines to all.
I don't know. If you're worried about, spatial stuff, read your Marie Kondo, watch your episode of Hoarders, and think about what you want to do to your closet. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Just remember that most of the secondhand stores, such as Goodwill and St. Vincent, are currently closed, but go ahead and make that pile to send later.
That's true. You can always hoard it till the stores are open. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye.